We have a quorum, so I call the Veterans and Military Affairs Financing Policy Committee to order. First of all, if you would all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Representative Lissigard, since you've been going over the minutes, would you like to move them?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Good. Minutes have been moved. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are moved. And now we have Representative Garofalo with House File 837. I'll move that House File 837 be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Garofalo, if you'd like to present the bill, identify yourself and present the bill for us, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Patrick Garofalo. I'm a state representative from Farmington.
Oh.
Thank you for allowing me a hearing on this bill. I greatly appreciate it. And also, Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment you on your decision to lead the committee with the Pledge of Allegiance. I think that it's not something I was aware this committee was doing, but I really do like that, and thank you for, I didn't even know you did it, so that's really cool.
Yeah, it's been historical with the Veterans Committee in both chambers.
Very nice. Thank you. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, the bill before you today, House File 837, it strikes a provision that's currently in law that allows for fees to be charged to those spouses and dependents of those who have served our country. Right now, in current law, we do allow the fee to be waived, but given the size of our budget surplus and the resources we have available, for a very modest amount of money, this would allow us to waive those burial fees again for those spouses and dependents of those who have served our country. The bill in front, the fiscal note, which I want to thank staff for getting to me, has an annual cost of roughly $316,000 in the first year of the biennium, rising to fiscal year 27, $410,000. I've reviewed the funds that are available in the support our troop funds, and there is a healthy balance that could easily be absorbed into this. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would ask you and the members of the committee for your support for this bill. And I do have a testifier with me today who's stepping in for someone to speak about this.
Okay. Sir, if you'd please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Chairman Newman, thank you for letting me testify into the committee. My name is Jack Schlichting. I live in Cannon Falls. I'm one of three precincts in Goodhue County that Pat, Representative Garofalo, is my representative by chance as well. This issue came up to me, actually. I am a spouse of a veteran. My wife served in the Air Force initially with the Tennessee National, well, through the Air Force in training, Tennessee National Guard, and then when we moved to Alaska, she transferred to there. She did not go through to retirement, but she did get honorable discharge, basically family reasons, as a pilot of a C-130. My neighbor, though, who has brought this to my attention, is retired CB and then joined the Minnesota National Guard and was deployed. And I was one of the neighbors that was called on to take care of the spouse in the home during that deployment. And so he made the point to me very clear that the spouse carries as heavy of a burden as the veteran in a deployment and in service. They have to pick up, and you guys are all aware of that, being involved with the veteran organizations and this issue, but they carry a heavy burden as well. And so then upon death, there another, and it's not a significant amount of money, but it's a stress level that they've already gone through while they were a spouse, and now they're being put through stress again at a burial time, or their family is. And with the situation financially, it seems like as a state, it's something we could do very easily, and in essence, kind of be in line with what the federal government's policy is as well. So thank you for letting me share my comments.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Schlichting. Does anyone have any questions of Representative Garofalo or Mr. Schlichting? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 837 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And thank you for coming forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you. And is Representative Engen here? He's not here.
Yep.
Oh, there you are. Please come forward.
I actually brought customary treats as my first bill's being heard, so I'll pass those out here as well.
What a guy.
Ooh. You suppose they're going to vote yes on this one?
How good are they?
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Representative Engen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I move that your House File 904 be re-referred to the House Transportation Policy and Finance Committee. So if you would, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Elliot Engen, and I represent District 36A here in the House. This is my first term, and ultimately, HF 904, what it does, members and Mr. Chair, it allows applicants to use their disabled American Veterans membership card as a verification of eligibility for specialized license plates. Right now, those are actively not confirmed as an eligible. It's not something that is allowed currently, but it also prohibits the DPS from charging people who are eligible for Gold Star specialized license plates the fee for those personal plates. Ultimately, this is just clarifying language. It seems like currently under current law, the American Legion and the VFW organizations, those membership cards do allow for that fee to be waived, but unintendedly, the DAV is right now left off. So that's what my bill does. It would just clarify that and allow for those fees to be waived.
Good. Thank you, Representative Ian. You have testifiers?
I do.
If they would come forward, please. Welcome, Mr. Aguirre. If you'd identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Newton. I'm Mick Aguirre, State Commander for the Disabled American Veterans, Department of Minnesota, and I'm the chairman of the CTF, which is the 8th recognized service organizations in the state of Minnesota. I'd like to testify in favor of this bill. I'm a combat Vietnam veteran. I can put my hand and rub the names of five people on that wall down here in the Capitol Plaza. I know some of the mom and dads, and they would be more than honored to have this bill pass with the addition of the Gold Star plates. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. I think it's a good thing, you know, that we've got the Commander's Task Force behind this as well. So do you have any other testifiers, Representative Inga?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question. I just kind of wanted to express my absolute support for this bill, especially the $100 waiving fee. So then, you know, when someone's got a Gold Star license plate, having the ability to specialize that in order to identify to everyone who's driving that this is the person that we're honoring as a result of the sacrifices that they've shown both our nation and our state. So I very much appreciate Representative Ingen bringing this forward, and I look forward to seeing it in the Transportation Committee as
Good.
Well.
Thank you. Anyone else? Are there any other questions? Anyone in the audience have any concerns or questions? Good. Yes, sir. Please come forward. Yep. If you would, welcome to the committee, first of all, and if you would, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division, and I want to thank Representative Engen for bringing this bill to this committee. DVS is in support of this bill, HF 904, and the representative did a great job explaining what it does, and I just want to just add that in practice, DVS is accepting DAV as congressionally chartered veteran service. This correction just allows us to reflect that in the statute. And additionally, for Gold Star families, we are not charging the $100 fee, but again, as a clarification of the statute so that we can continue that practice and have that reflected in the law as well. So thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Jean. Okay, seeing no further questions, yes, Representative Francis.
Thank you, Chair Newton. Thank you, Rep, for bringing the bill. I think it's great.
Do you have any idea the amount of people that would be under this, or like any numbers around that?
I think that it clarifies, I heard actually today, that 18,000 current Gold Star families under the DAV program are eligible for this. So, yeah, for the record, that's a great question to ask, so we can make sure that they know that they're eligible for this.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I think anytime we deal with license plates, you know, if there's not a sufficient number involved, it's going nowhere. So, good. Again, Representative Engen, thank you. And I renew my motion, and House File 904 be re-referred to the Transportation Committee. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes, I have to have a vote. All in favor of moving House File 904 to the Transportation Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Good. You're on your way. Is Representative Freiberg here? Oh, good. Good afternoon, Representative Freiberg. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here.
Representative Freiberg, I move that House File 236 be re-referred to the House Taxes Committee. So if you would, please identify yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Mike Freiberg, State Representative. I understand there's a DE1 amendment, too, that
okay.
I think you may want to move.
I'll move the DE1 amendment.
Thanks.
Would you like to explain the amendment?
Sure. The amendment does a couple things. So this relates to the market value homestead exclusion for disabled veterans. The amendment raises the disability exclusion from $330,000 to $400,000 and makes it proportional to the veteran's disability rating if it's over 70%. It adjusts the $400,000 figure for inflation, and it allows a surviving spouse to reapply for the exclusion.
Good. So do we have to move the that? Okay. All in favor of moving the DE1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay. So the amendment is on the bill. And do you have testifiers, Mr. Freeman?
I don't.
Okay. If you would like to explain the bill for us.
Sure. The bill was requested by a couple constituents of mine who are disabled veterans. The Disabled Veteran Homestead Exclusion allows veterans with a disability rating of 70% or higher to deduct some of the value of their home from property taxes. The exclusion was created in recognition of the service and sacrifice our disabled veterans provided. Further, many of the more seriously disabled vets have had to make substantial improvements to their homes for access, such as wider doors, access to toilets and sinks, cabinets and cupboards, chairlifts and bedlifts. So having this exclusion just makes sense. For a surviving spouse in a house that has had all of those changes, it becomes more difficult to sell the home and move into a smaller home without having to go through major expenses to the home the vet was living in. Unfortunately, we've had the same exclusion amount since the provision was first established in 2008. Under current law, for veterans with a disability rating of at least 70%, the exclusion amount is $150,000. This means that prior to calculating taxes on the home, $150,000 is subtracted from the home's value. For veterans with a disability rating of 100%, their total or permanent disability, the exclusion amount is $300,000. The amount of the exclusion should not remain stagnant for 15 years. Increasing the amount to reflect increased costs in society is a common sense change that furthers the goal of assisting disabled veterans. I hope members will support this common sense piece of legislation.
Good. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Representative Weeds.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg. Thanks for bringing this very important legislation forward to adjust for the market value changes, inflation, all those things that veterans are feeling. There are several thought processes that are going here, and I know of one where it was to add a 50% disability level, and possibly that's something we can discuss at a future session. But I think this is excellent. It enables all those things, honoring service, as well as recognizing what's going on in the economy and all. So I plan to support this. Thank you much, Representative Freiberg. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the one aspect of this that is a little bit concerning to me is the automatic inflationary aspect of this. Can you tell me when this original, the 300,000 market value mark was placed into statute? And then can you tell me how long in the last couple of years it's been where the value of the house has grossly exceeded what that value is? And the reason why I'm asking is because I think that what we've seen is the reactionary ability of this committee to do the right thing with regard to home values. You know, it's just within the last 2 years that we've seen housing values skyrocket as a result of a lot of different things, not just including inflation, but there's been a lot of new houses purchased on this market. It's driving everyone's values up. And I believe that our committee has been incredibly reactionary, very quick to respond to this as an issue. So I'm wondering, when was this first established into our state statute with the $300,000 mark? And then how long have we seen this disconnect between home values? Because if it's, you know, we've seen bills where, you know, something hasn't been touched for 20, 25, 30 years, and we're saying, wow, this is really out of mark. But it's, to my understanding, this has only been a year or two where we've seen this disconnect, and I believe that this committee's done a great job of reacting to it. I think that putting it on autopilot is potentially an unwise thing for the state to do. I think that we are throwing the keys to the vehicle and saying, here, drive this thing for us. That's a concern of mine. Great bill, great idea. I love it. I'm just concerned about the inflation autopilot idea. Can you explain that, please?
Representative Frederick.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Olson. Yeah, the $300,000 figure was put into place in 2008. You know, in my mind, raising it from $300,000 to $400,000, you know, I haven't done an exact calculation in terms of what the inflationary amount during that 15-year period would be. But it seems like an approximate value, you know, and I know counties have some concerns about potentially losing the property tax base also. So it seems like a reasonable effort to me. And I think putting in an inflationary adjustment, you know, does help recognition that. I mean, it's great to hear this committee has been quick to react and has been a pretty nimble committee. But I, you know, the fact that this hasn't been raised in 15 years says to me that having this automatic inflationary adjustment in there is appropriate and will ensure that there's at least a minimum level of increase. And if there is like a dramatic increase that in home values that exceeds the rate of inflation, hopefully the nimbleness of this committee will enable it to revisit the amount and adjust it higher still.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just kind of close by saying that there tends to be a lot of you look at the United States military's composition today, about 60% of the military comes from less than 20% of the population. You talk about rural Minnesotans, rural Americans tend to serve their country at a rate that far exceeds those of the inner city. And so when we're talking about doing something to assist veterans, we have to also kind of tie it into the fact that a county's government does in fact receive an kind of a disproportionate level of effect when you're talking about a rural county versus an urban county. One of my counties in particular, like Watonwan County, for example, even 10, 15, 20 of these veterans actually is a significant portion of the budget that's being shifted to other people when you've got 9,000 people living in a community instead of the half a million people that live in some of the more urban portions of the state. So very, very good idea. I support it absolutely, but I think I just want us to think about it from a rural urban portion as well, because this does heavily affect a rural scenario, and I don't think that there's any rural Minnesotan who would say, no, I think my veterans should have to pay. I think my 100% disabled veterans should have to pay more. But it's something we need to understand and just look at when we're talking about good government. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having this heard. Yeah. Great idea.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. I think the number is something like 14,000 to 18,000 statewide that would qualify under this. And it's one of the issues, Representative Weins, if we go to 50%, we'd have to look at how many people we're going to be covering, because there are many more people at 50% than there are at 70 or 100%. So are there any other questions, any concerns? Representative Clardy.
I just have a comment. Thank you, Chair Newton and Rep. I really like how the exclusion piece was as far as allowing families to apply for it. Having that two-year piece taken away, because during a time of death, people are in such, you know, crisis, they can't even think to process that. So I really appreciate that. I think that's really going to help a lot of veterans. And then there is another allowance along the same way. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Anyone in the audience would like to testify? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 236, as amended, be re-referred to the House Taxes Committee. So thank you, Representative Freiberg, for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Oh, I've got to vote again. So not used to it. All in favor of moving House File 236 as amended to the Taxes Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Good. Thank you. Now you're on your way.
Thank you.
Representative Bliss. I think you have testifiers also. Yeah. So, Representative Bliss, welcome to our committee. Would you like to move your bill, House File 1194?
I would, Mr. Chair. And okay. We also have an amendment.
Yes, you have an author's amendment.
Yes, I do, and I'd like to move the author's amendment.
Okay. Would you please explain your amendment, Representative Bliss?
Sure. On the basically, it's just taking out the language that allows the money to be used for repairs and maintenance of the facility. We feel as veterans that we feel the money would be best spent being spent on the veterans themselves. So that's why we're doing that.
Okay, good. So all in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Good. So the amendment is on the bill. And if you would please explain your bill, Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1194 authorizes $150,000 annually, I believe it is, to an organization that runs a facility in Walker, Minnesota, by the name of Camp Bliss. And I want to state for the record, this has no affiliation with myself, my company, or my family. So get that out of the way. I do appreciate them honoring me and naming their camp after me. In all seriousness, this is a really good place. They do a lot of good things for veterans and first responders with PTSD. And anything I would say would be not nearly as eloquent as my guest. So I'm going to let the testifier take over from here.
Good, thank you. And if you would please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with the testimony, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kara Ruff. I'm the founder and executive director of Independent Lifestyles and Camp Bliss. I'm here to ask for your support on House File 1194. And I'm here today because veterans in Minnesota are in crisis, and I see that every time we facilitate a retreat for them. Throughout the U.S., veterans are not getting the support, resources, or assistance they need to thrive, especially after deployment. I urge the Minnesota State Legislature to fund Camp Bliss so that we can continue to provide the wellness and therapeutic experiences that provide lasting changes, actually save marriages, create wellness and resiliency, and provide for the social networks that the veterans are desperate to be part of. What hundreds of veterans have told me over the past few years is that they need more community-based services. They need opportunities to express their deepest grief where it will not be added to their service file. They would need confidential opportunities to be vulnerable, to heal, and to bond with other service members with shared experiences. They often tell me how isolated and alone they feel and do not know how to repair the damage that their service caused. When soldiers returned home, they often feel that the worst is behind them. They got back alive, and they're free from the fear of dying. But many are unprepared for civilian life, but somehow yet expected to manage this. I just came from Camp Bliss. I facilitated a veterans and spouses retreat all weekend, and one of them so eloquently said, you know, they do a great job of teaching us how to conduct ourselves and live our lives while we have our uniform and our boots on. But when that uniform and those boots come off, we're left on our own, and we don't know how to cope anymore. And we still feel like we have to wear that shield with us at all times. Another veteran that was there with his wife had not been able to express emotion since Vietnam, and for the first time in all these years was able to actually break down with emotion and become vulnerable. Afterwards, his wife came up to me and thanked me with tears in her eyes and said, "Wade, you don't know how many decades we've been waiting for this breakthrough. Thank you. It will help our families." We're still losing approximately 23 veterans a day to suicide. This statistic is a stark reminder that soldiers need much more than just medical services to recover, regenerate, and thrive. A VA report and statement underline just how complex of an epidemic it really is. Officials in charge explain that the department is simply incapable of addressing the issue and that it needs help from the private sector to properly tackle it. The executive in charge of Veterans Health Administration said, "We cannot do this alone, and we call on our community partners to join our effort." Over the past few years, we have served 419 veterans and their family members. At Camp Bliss, the veterans are in charge. We create and facilitate customized retreats based on the feedback we receive and therefore provide a wide array of services to help veterans gain the level of support that they deserve. The array of services includes PTSD, Gold Star families, veterans and spouses, military sexual trauma, suicide prevention, caregivers, and much, much more. The wellness retreats for our female veterans have also exploded as the female veteran population has been significantly overlooked and underserved. With $150,000 in funding, we can serve up to approximately 176 veterans and their families with life-changing experiences every year. We conduct pre- and post-evaluations to monitor health and well-being and gather feedback at every opportunity. We pride ourselves on being accountable and transparent. We created Camp Bliss with no direct funding for veteran services. We did it because not doing it would have been an outrage. It was and is the right thing to do. And now we look to the Minnesota legislature to invest in what truly is working in our community, which is cost effective and what prevents exploding medical and mental health costs and allows veterans to live with dignity, respect, and support that they deeply and drastically need and deserve. And that would come in House File 1194. I do have five very brief veteran testimonies from their experiences at Camp Bliss that I'd like to share with you, if we can get it to work, the sound.
Hi, my name is Pete Rolfson. I served in the United States Air Force from 1963 to 67. I'm a veteran. I volunteer at the VA, and I talk to a lot of veterans. I come to Camp Bliss with a lot of expectations. I have fun. And man, I tell you, these people treat you well. I fish with a lot of guys that never had the opportunity to ever fish before. And it was so fun helping them and watching them. And they appreciated it so much. There was actually tears in their eyes. It's a wonderful thing for these veterans. You know, they've done a lot of things. And for the cost that it cost to do this, it's amazing how much joy a veteran, the retired veteran that cannot even ever think about going fishing or hunting or anything, and what Camp Bliss does for us is a truly an amazing honor. Thank you, Camp Bliss, and thank you for all of you people that support us. It's a wonderful, wonderful deal. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Robbie Jankowski. I was in the Army from 1987 to 1994. I had the pleasure of coming to Camp Bliss on a fishing outing. Everything has just been wonderful, from the food to the hospitality and the camaraderie with the vets that I made and friends probably for a long life. And the things that are done here and across the state for the veterans of North Dakota, or for Minnesota, excuse me, are just phenomenal. And they need more help, but this is a very good program. So I would raise money for it if you can. Money makes everything go around, and this is a very well-deserved program. I feel honored that I was able to come up here. Thank you very much. and have a good night.
Rich Lane, Camp Bliss was a blissful stay. I really needed it bad. I was going through some rough times myself, not only through family, loss of family members and everything. This was a vacation well needed. Thank you so much for helping other veterans having the opportunity to do this. I had three combat tours, Kosovo, Afghanistan, and just got back from Africa in 2021. I cannot say anything bad about this place. This place is well needed by a lot of vets, not only myself, but other ones, as including your Vietnam vets. I feel more connected with other vets now being here because you make long life friendship with those veterans. And I've made four or five new veteran friends that I will be keeping on my speed dial from here on. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brandon Treadwell. I served in the Minnesota Army National Guard. I've done one combat tour over in Africa. Camp Bliss, this whole weekend has been absolutely wonderful. It was well needed. Since I've been struggling financially and stressful, it got my mind off of everything. I can just relax and feel comfort-free of anything. Just so much needed time. Connected with so many veterans here. I met probably four or five more that I shared similar experiences with. And overall, it's just a much needed thing for me.
Hi, my name is Alan T. I'm a medically retired Marine. I've been on Reaper for quite a while, but it's still incredible to get together with other vets and just the sense of camaraderie we get by getting together and talking about stuff that only vets understand. And then to have people like this that come and help us out and go so far above and beyond for us is incredible. So I would, as a taxpayer and voter, heavy voter, I would really like to see my Minnesota government, federal government, everything support groups like this and these people especially, because what they've done for us this weekend, I cannot say enough about. This is the most incredible thing I've done in a very long time. And just God bless these people for doing this. And I would really like, again, to say or love you people to support these people and give them what they need, because they need it.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Ruff. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Okay, does anyone have any questions of the testifiers or Representative Bliss? Seeing none, yes? Oh, yes, Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bliss and Ms. Carr. I'm glad to see and hear that you include family members. And for those of us that have served over recent years, the expansion to include family members is needed indeed. And the reintegration process that many of us have gone through would not be complete without having our families or those that are our families. You had mentioned that the appropriation here would go to 176 visits. In the previous amount, how many Minnesota veterans have gone through your program?
Ms. Ruff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. I just want to speak to your first point. Adding the family members was absolutely crucial for us because, as you've heard even in other testimonies, it's not just the veteran that serves. And in these spouses' retreats, there's so much healing that needs to happen within the relationship and just for the spouse as well. So thank you. Like I said, we've served 419 to date. And where's my sheet? Sorry. So, because we were not previously able to count family members at all. So in 2023, we've already served 49 veterans. That was out without last weekend, so that would be 59 veterans as of just 2023 already. In 2022, we served 85. plus 8 family members. In 2021, we served 44 plus 4 family members. In 2020, during the height of the pandemic, we still served 14 and 11 family members. But, of course, pandemic years were pretty tough, and we had to cancel a lot of them. So they're desperate to get back in full action.
Okay, Representative Weeds.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bliss, thank you very much for that data. I think it's important for us to know that any money that we put forward for a great program like this, as we did with Veterans on the Lake and Helmets to Hard Hats, all of those things, we do want to have a tracking to make certain that the program is serving our veterans. And with that, I intend to support this. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Ruff.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I just want to reiterate, the Department of Veterans Affairs does a very good job. They hold us very accountable. We have to provide DD-214s and a lot of documentation for every single veteran we serve. And, of course, again, we collect pre- and post-surveys on everybody. We pride ourselves on that accountability, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So really quick, I greatly appreciate the fact that on the back page here it talks about anyone who is considered a veteran would also be a current Armed Forces member while serving in the active or reserve component. And I'd just like to take a quick moment to not really educate the committee, but to talk about what it's like to be in the reserves. What we do is I could at any point in time be picked up for a deployment if a unit that is deploying needs a captain within the reserves, anywhere within the federal government. If they say, hey, you know, this unit in New York City needs a captain and we've got a captain here in Minnesota, he's ready to go, and they could pick me up and they could go. And so the support that is formed in a unit like this or in an organization like this, whereas I could come back from that deployment and not have a single story to talk to with any of my other members because I was the only one who got picked up for that deployment. It happens regularly. One of the saddest things, or one of the toughest, it wasn't sad, it was very tough for me. A number of years ago when I was in command, I received a notification from a much higher entity. Our division said, you need to fill these slots. They're going on deployment. Pick them. And I got a spreadsheet that said, here are the jobs that we need filled, and here are the soldiers within your unit who have those jobs. And I had to look at these individuals and know that their families were going to be separated for a year's time, and I had to be the one who chose it. The most, you know, we did what we could to make people, you know, there were people who said, hey, I get to go with my friend. I'm happy to do so. We had people volunteer, but the toughest one, and I'll never forget it, she was a good friend of mine who was the only person in the unit who had that job-specific position. And she had 3 kids recently. You know, it was very tough. And I called her on the phone and I said, I am so sorry. You are the only person. You have to go. And that was very tough. And she came back from that deployment not being able to share any of those stories with any of the people who she served with currently because she didn't go with them. So I appreciate the fact that you are bringing soldiers together, including the ones who are in the reserve component, so they can share those stories with people who don't currently have them. But I did have one quick question. I just want to make sure that every one of these individuals, the $150,000 that we're going to be spending, those are all Minnesota veterans, correct? Someone from New York is not going to be able to take advantage of Minnesota taxpayer dollars.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. They are all Minnesota veterans, and MDVA ensures that as well. We do have veterans who have flown in from across the United States because it's unbelievable how necessary these services are. So that's quite a statement about how important they are. But we do not use this funding. We raise other funds to support them if they should come in from out of state.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, concerns? Good. Well, thank you. So I renew the motion that House File 1194, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. So thank you, Ms. Ruff, and thank you, Representative Bliss, for bringing this forward.
Thank you for hearing us, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Clardy, I'm glad you're here.
Me too.
And Representative Clardy, as you're coming up, I believe you have testifiers also.
Yes, I have a couple from the Veterans Resilience Project, and I also have Jacob Fry.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, Jacob Palace. I was thanking the governor, or I mean the mayor.
Okay. Representative Clardy, if you would identify yourself for the record and then move your bill to the committee.
Yes, my name is Representative Mary Frances Clardy, and I'd like to move House File 1353.
Good, thank you. So the bill is before us. Would you like to tell us about the bill?
Yes, briefly. So I'm really excited to be here to have a bill that's going to make a difference and has made a difference with families that are veterans, and so this is really good. Its companion bill in the Senate is 1509, which is sponsored by Senators Mitchell, Klein, and Morrison. So this bill will allow spouses and their current military service members, spouses, to receive iMovement desensitization, and the Veterans Resiliency Project was appropriated in 2021, Chapter 12, Article 37, and therefore the initial bill was approved to only include the military members, and so this bill that I'm bringing forward to you today is to include their spouses. Because of the success that they've had already, and it's also to extend it for an additional 2 years. So we've been hearing about some symptoms of PTSD. So untreated, it can include reliving a lot of traumatic events and flashbacks and nightmares and depression and avoidance of families and friends. So this, too, can affect families and just communities and how one operates within. And it's especially the Department of Military Veterans has noted that the PTSD will affect or can affect like marriage relationship problems and parenting or poor family functioning. So we want to make sure that our veterans have every tool that they need to be successful. And so one of our witnesses here, I'm not going to talk too much, is going to kind of describe what the program is and how it actually really works. The appropriation amount is $400,000 for the fiscal year 2024, and then another $400,000 for the fiscal year 2025. And it would be appropriated from general funds to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs for a grant to the Veteran Resiliency Project, which is a fabulous nonprofit, and they'll tell you all about their purpose. Just a quick little personal story. I called a friend of mine that I've known since college, so I've known him for 45 years, and he was a lieutenant colonel, and I'm like, I just wanted to talk to you about this bill that I have, and anyone that, that could benefit from this. And he said, well, I would have been one of those people. And in fact, he was one of the people that Governor Tim Walz reported to. So anyway, I thought that was kind of a neat connection. But I'm not going to go much further. I'm going to turn it over to the experts.
Okay, thank you, Representative Clardy. And is it Ms. Phillips?
Correct.
Yes, if you would identify yourself for the record, please. Yes, this is Mr. Marchlick.
I'm here.
Pull up a chair. And
I appreciate that. I'm just going to take a minute here. My name is Eric Wickheiser. I'm the chairman of the board of Veteran Resilience Project. Just want to make a little slight change there. We're not plural. We're singular. And I want to thank you, Chairman Newton, and Representative Clardy, to bringing this bill up. It's very important to us. The legislature's, I'm going to calm down because I'm a little nervous here. But what I want to do is we've talked to Senator Anderson and Representative Bliss, who's a fellow Navy veteran, and Senator Bennett, and that we're trying to get the input of all so that we get all sides, get all the questions answered. I'm going to turn this over to Major Jonna Phillips, who is our therapy director.
Good. Thank you. Major Phillips, we're back with you. If you'd identify yourself, please.
My name is Jonna Phillips. Good afternoon, Chairman Newton and committee members. I am the therapy program director for Veterans Resilience Project, a licensed marriage family therapist. Actually, a professor of mine was Dr. Tina Weems, so I appreciate that. That's why I'm such a good therapist now. But I am also a spouse of an active duty Army veteran and have served for almost 23 years in the Air National Guard. Currently, I am a major and the director of Equal Opportunity at the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth, Minnesota, and work on the Sexual Harassment Task Force for the Minnesota Air National Guard. I thank you for this dedicated time to speak about the vital importance of veterans' mental health. And I'm here to ask you to support our bill, House File 1353, which would allow us to support not only the veteran and service members, but their spouses. Overall, we do see that there's a reduction in stigmatization around seeking mental health support. However, embedded in the military culture is the call to serve others before yourself, or the belief that one should be able to handle it. I often have to tell my military clients, yes, they are soldiers, but they are humans as well. As a Minnesota nonprofit, Veterans Resilience Project staff and board, we work tirelessly to reduce barriers to care. Our goal is to effectively treat post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma, including military sexual trauma, amongst Minnesota veterans. VRP does this by providing and building awareness of EMDR therapy, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. In 2012, our founder, Elaine Nguyen, who's also here, also a therapist and a veteran spouse, conducted a pilot program specifically providing EMDR therapy to Minnesota veterans. The results were significant in that 77% of veterans completed the course of treatment and 100% had a decrease in their PTSD symptoms. With the funding, VRP has focused on increasing the number of our therapists in our network. We've provided two advanced EMDR trainings this past year. Therapists that come to our training are already traumatologists or EMDR experts. We just provide additional training on EMDR and deepen their therapy skills that they already have. 50% of these therapists offer telehealth services to increase access to care, ensuring we serve veterans in rural Minnesota. We have another training already scheduled for May that will be held in Duluth, supporting our efforts advancing in the northern region. Additionally, I think it's important to understand we are very dedicated to educating veterans, service members, families, and the community and veteran organizations that PTSD and trauma symptoms are not just something a veteran has to live with, but rather there's effective treatment that reduces symptoms and increases quality of life. EMDR, for your awareness, is recognized by the National Center for PTSD, the VA, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, and the World Health Organization. Is one of the most researched therapy modalities for PTSD, and it's considered one of the top methods of treatment. EMDR allows the trauma memory to be reprocessed, allowing the disturbing memory to be stored as a standard memory where it no longer causes distress. Research shows that EMDR reduces symptoms of PTSD, flashbacks, nightmares, and anxiety. It improves sleep, and due to it having a somatic component, reduces the tension the body holds. One therapist noted recently that our body holds 80% of our trauma. Since receiving the grant, we have attended over 16 events, reaching out to over 2,000 service members and their families. We have had over 200 contact cards filled out requesting to get started with EMDR specifically. Research identifies that the conversion rate is typically around 10% and even lower when it comes to mental health services due to additional barriers. Therefore, we are consistently and constantly reaching out to these veterans and service members who have shown interest. As we attended events this past year, we noticed a significant pattern of veteran spouses asking about whether they too could have access to this EMDR therapy through VRP. And that is why we are here today to share this message on their behalf. We ask that you support House File 1353 and allow spouses to have the same access to EMDR through BRP. Spouses have identified that they have been holding their own invisible wounds. This is often due to spouses' heightened focus on the veteran's mental health and the energy needed to minimize the impact of trauma on the family system. As a military spouse, I can tell you we normalize separations, moves, isolation, witnessing PTSD symptoms, compassion fatigue, loss, unexpected family stressors as something we do without recognizing the impacts of our own mental health. The addition of the spouse would utilize, the addition of including the spouse would utilize funding that is already in place. The VRP is funded with an appropriation of $400,000 per year, and we would ask that this would continue through 2026. We work extremely hard with our grant manager, ensuring the funding is both ethically and responsibly managed. Our organization, its goal is to build a sustainable organization that reflects a diversity of funding sources. We plan to raise an additional $1,050 to expand our outreach program. The additional funding supports operation expense as well as hiring outreach coordinators. The work we are doing can have a profound impact on Minnesota veterans and service members, and with your support, their spouses. We are dedicated to increasing the quality of life for all of Minnesota veterans and service members suffering with PTSD and trauma, and by providing evidence-based, accessible therapy, we believe we will create lifelong change.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just a quick question. How much money does it cost to send one veteran through this entire session from beginning to conclusion?
So Ms. Phillips?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Chairman. It is $125 per session, and we provide 12 free sessions. And so if I can do the math, I think that's $1,250. And that is a pride point as a therapist. We really want to take care of not only the veterans, but the therapists that are providing this. And so I think that is a very reasonable rate. I'm not sure if you're all aware, but therapists are pretty burnt out right now as well. And so it is a really great way of taking care of them as they're taking care of our veterans.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, so I just, you know, did some quick math. So $400,000 appropriated through our budget here. At $125 per session times up to 12 sessions per individual, that means that for $400,000, we could effectively treat 266.66 veterans, so someone who doesn't complete the program entirely. My concern here is, whereas I think that's a great and honorable cause to treat veterans, 266 plus, you know, two-thirds veterans, if everyone's spouse gets that as well, that means that effectively we are treating 133 veterans, 133 individuals who have gone into the face of danger and have come out, and they've come out in a scarred way that needs and deserves this treatment. I'm not trying to say that a spouse's trauma is not relevant or not in need of some form of care, but when I'm looking at it, I'm saying we could effectively reach 266 veterans and treat them for the trauma that they've sustained. I think that that's potentially a more honorable thing for us to be doing than just treating 133 veterans. And I know not every spouse would do it. I understand this. I understand. But when we're really looking down at it, we desperately owe these veterans everything we possibly can to get them right. You know, they went out, they served our country, they went into the face of danger, and they came out. And they came out scarred, but they still came out. And we owe everything we possibly can to those members. And I would desperately advocate that we treat 266 of them every year instead of 133.
Good. Ms. Phillips, if you have a response.
Yeah. And I appreciate that so much, being married to a veteran with PTSD. The part I would advocate for the spouses is, you know, I'm the one who's holding his trauma just as much as him. And so I've experienced the deployments. I've experienced him waking up in the night with cold sweats. I have witnessed him losing friends to the death by suicide. And so I do think your point is very valid, and I think the part of the funding, we would be responsibly managing that, and that's also why we're raising other additional funding as well, because we do feel like treating the spouses also opens the door for the veterans. I don't know if you know, I'm sure you know this, but sometimes the veterans are a harder client, but if their spouse goes in and gets support, often that leads them to being willing to take that step as well. So that's my point of argument there.
Good, thank you. Representative Hudena.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a series of questions, so I'll come back through you. Great mission, love it. I had a long time in the Army as well. Know a number of the members up at the 148th. And I've got some experience on the military nonprofit side as well. So love the mission, love everything about it, but I've got some concerns on the business side that I'd like to either ask you or your board chair. And the first one is, I don't see your tax ID number on your website. It's required to be there if you're soliciting donations, which you are.
Thank you for
Representative Ms. Phillips. Yeah.
Yeah, we will probably put that on there today, so I appreciate that. I think we just transferred to a new website, and so that has just not transferred over.
Okay. Mr.
Representative Hudell.
Also, when I was checking out the organization, I see multiple PO boxes registered in different cities. There's a 4-digit one in Minnetonka, a 5-digit one in Minneapolis. Just wondering if, but I didn't see any physical location. Do you have a physical office location?
Right now we don't have a physical location because we're doing everything on Zoom. You know, based on the pandemic and that, which has been hard for everybody. So we do have a brick and mortar, which happens to be my home. And then we also have the PO box, which is near my post office. So eventually, as we get along, we will need extra funds to get an office, you know, because we would like a brick and mortar place, but we don't have that ability right now.
Sure. I've got just a couple more, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Do you know what your charitable giving percentage is?
Ms. Phillips?
Wait, can you explain? I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So charitable giving percentage, if you run a nonprofit organization, it's probably one of the biggest numbers that's talked about on a regular basis, or at least that donors want to see. It's the percentage of your revenues that are used for actual mission work.
We have that. I just don't have it in front of me, but I can definitely email you with those numbers.
Okay. Yes. That'd be great.
And Ms. Phillips, if you would send it to the entire committee. Yes.
Two more, Mr. Chair, and I'll be done. The next, so you guys are currently filing annually the IRS 990N is in November, which is a postcard filing meant for organizations that are taking in $50,000 or less in revenues. Your revenues obviously far exceed that. Can you tell me why you're filing that postcard? It's not the correct form to file.
Mr. Wigner, sir.
You're absolutely correct. That we have filed the 990N, and we did that because of the we were under the amount of money required to file the actual 990s. This year for 2022, we will file. We're in the process of building that right now, the full 990 with all of the information, because people need to know that.
And we didn't we did not receive the signing of the grant and funding until March of 2022. And so this will be our first year with that funding. And that's why we're filing the full 990.
Last one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. external audit, I couldn't find an external audit on your organization either, and I don't exactly know the answer to this question yet. You're required by state law if you have $750,000 or more in revenues. If you haven't hit that yet, great. If it sounds like with this potential appropriation that you would. So it would be my expectation if you come back to the committee in the future that there's a copy of that external financial audit. You'll actually derive your charitable giving percentage out of that as well. And I think what I'm getting at for you and for the committee members, the mission is awesome. You got to make sure that the business side of the house is squared away too. It's something that not only your donors, but this committee is going to be very interested if you continue to come to the committee for more appropriations. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for presenting, and I enjoyed speaking with you in my office as well. And some of the questions here I've gotten at the answers I was looking for, at least some of that information. I would like to see more breakdown of what the funding goes for in the different pockets and so on. But I do have a question for the bill author Representative Clarity. Thank mm-hmm. you for carrying this on. And I'm not in asking this question, I'm not questioning the effectiveness of this therapy. Actually, I like alternative therapies or different types, and I think it's good to try these things. But my question is, have you considered, Representative Clarity, having a reporting requirement in here that actually measures the effectiveness of the therapy and reports that is built into this bill? Because I think it's so important, and I've been working on this on education, where we're working with so many nonprofits that we give grants to, that we always have an effectiveness component built in. So is that something that maybe I missed, it's in the bill, or if it's not in there, would you consider adding a component?
Representative Clarity.
Thank you, Chair Newton. Thank you, Rep. It is in the grant. So I am a data person, so I think I really respect that question. So, yeah, so if you look in the grant, it's in there, delineated in there.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to hear. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Representative Wains.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clardy and Director Phillips, thank you. And I think you've heard some kind of tough questions from this side. One of the things as a freshman, I came in, it's like I want to change the world. Well, maybe I can't change the world, but maybe I can do a little bit for those people that I've served with, that have become friends with, or their family members of veterans. And as we ask these questions, it is not to doubt that your intent and everything. It is that we want to see results. From those of us that have served, it's the mission intent. We want to have measurable effects that we are hitting where we're at. And you'll get, for customers, you'll get no one that's more pernicious, I think, than a veteran. It's what's the juice for the squeeze? Mm-hmm. Does this work? And maybe it only works for 30%, 50% of folks. I think it's probably worth it, figuring that out. But we need to know. And I guess this question probably goes to Representative Clardy. It could go to Director Phillips or Mr. Wickheiser. Is the research that is done, is it tied to a research institute like the University of Minnesota or Mayo? Or what's the connective tissue for your research and database?
Well, the research comes a lot from what's called the EMDRIA. It's Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing Institution Association, and so it actually on the handouts we passed around for all of you, the last page on that has all of our resources, which documents where the research has come out of as well. And so there have been over 30 studies since the late 1980s when this was first founded by Francine Shapiro. Our pilot program also, again, showed 100% of reduction of PTSD symptoms. And the other part of that that's really important to know is veterans are a difficult population to actually complete treatment, and 77% of those completed the treatment, which is I don't want to underplay the significance of that. But besides the pilot program, again, it's one of the most researched modalities, and again, that's why we actually included the references on the back for all of you. And what I will do is, along with the budget, I will send those references to you as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think what you've heard, at least, you know, from Representative Bennett and also Representative Hudella, is we would like to get the feedback and reports from this. And I cannot stress enough, if there is a local D1 research institute that's interested in partnering with this, that would be fantastic. Not that I'm a gopher, but I am. But that would be great. I mean, there's other mental health organizations, and I saw that you had the victims of the Center of Torture. I'm not certain if there's a testifier here or not, but that is an interesting institution as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And I know we have had conversations about having support with Wilder as well. And I think they helped organize the pilot program as well as the university. And I would specifically like to see that for spouses, because there is not as much research regarding pre and post for spouses as there is for veterans and service members.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I just make closing comments? Thank you very much. I'd like to be invited, or maybe as a veteran, go through this process. I have not read as much as I've seen today presented about this. I do think many of us have gone through a bunch of different types of tests, pre and post deployment. This maybe has some hope for some veterans. So invite me to the next. I'd like to see the operation and maybe even take part in it myself. And Director Phillips, you've outed me. I am married to a mental health therapist for over 31 years. So it's she needs to take the EMDR test as well. But as a guy that's an operator, airborne ranger, done all that kind of stuff. About 12 years ago, when I was the lead planner for the state, the adjutant general came to me, and we'd just gotten back from Iraq, and we had we lost 3 combat casualties, and then we also had a suicide, a fairly ranking member that committed suicide in theater. And we had this presence that the Army was going to get serious now, because they were taking a look at the metrics, and this is active duty Army as well as Guard and Reserve forces, that maybe we were ahead of the population on the amount of suicides. And why is that? You know, that's the big question. You know, how did we get here? Was it the war? Was it how we do things? Was it how we didn't do things? And he tasked me as a planner is to figure this thing out. It's because we were listed as the highest reporting state for suicides. And there were other states that were much larger than us, and I'm not going to name their names, but they were reporting 0 suicides, where we knew that wasn't correct. So he sent me on this errand. It's the quest for the grail. You know, what is it? And, you know, normally with mental health kind of things, we'd send them off to the doc, or maybe it's a spiritual thing. We'd talk to the chaplain. In my conversations with how we dealt with it as an organization, we shunted people off because, again, like operators, is you break, you're not ours. We got to keep on moving on. Mission first, right? Well, then people always. So as we had a time to reflect, and I was leading this group, I brought in the usual suspects, and then started talking and realized that it's not complicated. It's a very complex problem. And it may be relationships. It may be deployment. It may be whatever. And when I went back to the adjutant general, he said to me, we may have not done this to them, but they're wearing the uniform. We have an obligation, and we're gonna do what we can for them. And we put together a program, which was very invasive, and it bordered on HIPAA stuff, where we wanted to make certain that we were still protecting their privacy and their medical records, but we wanted to get at what was causing them problems. And who would know better than their first line leader, the sergeants that lead these guys? And maybe it was only for a weekend, a month after we got back from deployment. But the key thing is we were able to marshal the energy, hire a bunch of psychiatrists, and push people through using the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon network. And once we had launched the beta program, I had lost two guys in my unit to suicide. And we had launched this thing and we got it going. The Minnesota National Guard had 13 months without a suicide. But we had a crap ton of suicide ideations. We had, our resources were maxed out. And we started finding out there's some cultural things. And once people were bought in to what, that mental health is something that we need to be aware of and we need to take, you know, proactive actions and put the resources where the greatest need is, then we were able to start fighting it and combating it. I don't know about EDMR, how effective it is, but I think it's worth a shot, and I think families, they get a lot of feedback. And I mean, and I use the word, I say PTS, post-traumatic stress. That's sort of a movement. You don't say disorder or syndrome. It's post-traumatic stress. All of us get it to a certain extent, whatever it is, car accident, maybe some kind of altercation. But I just want to say thank you for what you're doing, but we're going to hold you accountable.
Absolutely.
And we want this to work for our veterans, and invite me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weinstein. Thank you for sharing that. And some of us try to fool ourselves and think we come out with post-traumatic strength, and it's not exactly the case. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this bill. I was on the Veterans Committee last session when we heard this bill, and I think last session we actually heard from a few veterans who were impacted and really found great relief in this course of EMDR treatment. I'm wondering, just to ground us in, because I think that the conversation here is how we're actually providing that therapy and providing that improvement for our veterans and their families. If you could just ground us in, because I think that the statistic that you mentioned, and maybe this is for Representative Clardy or Major Phillips, but with 77% of veterans completing the program and or the line of treatment and 100% having some decrease in post-traumatic stress. Can you talk about sort of what that means for folks and their families who go through it and what that means in terms of that decrease in stress?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many examples as a therapist, but also what you mentioned, some of the veterans that came and gave their testimony. One example we like to share is of Mr. Tom McKenna, and some of you might know him. He runs a nonprofit called Every Third Saturday. And at the time of him receiving EMDR, he had the suicidal ideation and significant PTSD. But through EMDR, he was definitely able to be more desensitized, and now he runs a nonprofit. So I think a very successful nonprofit. So that is one example. And him and his spouse actually have, through that nonprofit, have ran marriage classes. So I think that is just one example. Some recent examples, I had one veteran, we're actually working on her testimony right now. She is a survivor of military sexual trauma, which is basically a pandemic in and of itself in the military. And her quote is, "I want veterans to know when they heal themselves, they heal their families." But I would also like to note that she received this treatment in 2014, I believe, and served from 79 to 81. So I talk a lot about the disparity of time. And so that's 40 years of somebody's life versus 12 sessions. And that's what we're asking for all of you to support, is really reducing the disparity of time. I think the part of what that is too is a lot of education and pacing with the veterans. I'm a therapist, I'm a veteran, I'm married to a military member, and let me tell you, it is a pacing. It might not be today, it might not be tomorrow, but 6 months from now, that individual might be ready. I received a phone call just this past week of a veteran And I know it's a very hard phone call. And so I also manage every veteran as the therapy program director. They're calling me or getting set up with me directly. And then I work with their therapist to make sure there's quality of care. Elaine Nguyen, our founder, talks about one of the things we do a lot of the time is we ask veterans to share their stories before they're ready. And so we're even mindful of them sharing too much to me because I'm not going to be their therapist. We need enough information to make sure they qualify, but then I really want them opening up with the correct person where it's going to be a safe and effective treatment. So I hope I'm answering your question, but it's a significant privilege to hold space for these individuals, and I often think when they call us or come into a therapist store, it's actually the bravest thing they've done.
Good, thank you. Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Greenman, please.
Thank you, and I just really appreciate that, and I think hearing hearing the long-term impacts, I will say that Tom Kenna and his third Saturday is in my district. And so if you haven't had a chance to go visit, they have a coffee shop that trains and veterans, and they have a whole new building. But I think that what I think is really important about this treatment and this bill is all of that was made possible by that care and that therapy, right? It wasn't the only thing, but really making sure that we're focusing on the treatments that work for folks so that they can long-term, and that giving back. I mean, if any of you want to come to their new beautiful building and grab coffee with me, and I'm sure Tom would love to have the whole committee, but it's a really important thing because it is serving a whole new generation of veterans and their families, and so I just really appreciate that and appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Newton. Major Phillips, appreciate the fantastic work that you're doing and everyone associated with this organization is doing to help our vets. One thing that impressed me was the map included here in the slides of just kind of the statewide impact of your reach. I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit further just on, you know, how do you reach out to connect with those vets, connect with their spouses?
Director
that's
Phillips.
A great question, thank you, Representative. We are hiring, right now we just hired one outreach coordinator, and then we're hiring another one this summer, specifically in the North region. And so they will definitely be at any veteran event that you could possibly imagine. We're also really building a relationship with the County Veteran Service Officers. I'm actually speaking maybe next week, so I should look at my calendar, to really make sure we partner with them. Sometimes veterans come in and they don't have the correct documentation. You'd be surprised on how many people struggle to find the correct DD-214. So we really have been able to partner with that, and Commissioner Herkey is working on giving us a direct POC to help alleviate some of that as well, so we appreciate that support. And honestly, this is the other thing that brought up spouses. Like, I would say about 50% is the spouses are contacting me to get their veteran set up for therapy, not the veteran themselves. And so the spouses are a critical asset, but, you know, as they're emailing me or talking to me, I can hear it in their voices as well. So, but we are also asking all of you to share and spread the word. Minnesota is a really veteran-friendly state, and actually in the North region is probably the second highest concentration of veterans, and in those rural communities, so they are sometimes more difficult to reach, hence why we have the telehealth option as well, which is actually amazing. I was skeptical myself as a therapist doing EMDR therapy virtually. And it is the most amazing process to see people in their own homes and safe spaces move through it.
Good, thank you. Are there any other questions? Anyone? Thank you. Representative Clardy, I'll renew the motion then that House File 1353 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Chair Newton?
Yes, Representative Clardy.
I had one more person that was a testifier.
Oh,
that
okay.
Made it here. Can you just make some brief comments?
Yes, if she'd please come forward.
Thank you.
Please come forward, yeah.
I'll make it quick.
Okay. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, hello. My name is Jacob Thomas. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, for the record there. Thank you for letting me testify briefly. So I live downtown in Minneapolis. I served the United States Air Force from 2008 to 2016. And I'm also the communication director for Common Defense, which is a national veterans organization that helps train and organize veterans across the country to create a more just, peaceful, and equitable world. And I wanted to come in support of HF 1353 as well. A brief kind of just statistics, since I feel like we all love those, sounds like. So some research done by the White House that was recently put out says since 2010, more than 71,000 veterans have died by suicide, which is the total number, which is more than the total number of deaths in combat during Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan combined. An important aspect of that is that post 9/11 veterans like myself represent an overage in that grouping of both people diagnosed with PTSD and with suicidal ideation. So with those numbers, and then post 9/11 for the record as well, right, is those who served after the attacks in 2001 in both wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and then the more commonly grouped global war on terror, which is still part of the original AUMFs there. So about 7% of veterans overall throughout eras are diagnosed with PTSD and then subsequently have other issues tied to that. For post 9/11 veterans, that's about 29% of their subset for the era that they served in that are diagnosed. We also, as I think we kind of talked about earlier as well, women veterans hold much higher rates of PTSD as well. So about 13% of women veterans have PTSD or PTS symptoms. About 6% overall for males in the military. And we know, as we've talked about earlier as well, that secondary traumatic stress or secondary PTSD is a real thing and comes with its own issues and effects. And that is mainly handled and carried by military spouses, family members, and caregivers. One of my roles while I was on active duty and then later in the reserves here, actually, was as a sexual assault victims advocate. In that role, we worked with survivors of military sexual trauma and their families to help get the care that they needed and navigate the courts martial process or civilian court process, depending on which way things needed to go. And I, through that process, actually first learned about EMDR myself in 2013 from Air Force medical officers who were testing it out in that space. And I saw how effective it can be, not only for our veterans, but for anyone experiencing PTSD. So I've seen it be effective. I've seen it help both our service members, their families, their spouses, and caregivers. And as a veteran myself living with PTSD and a survivor of military sexual trauma, I think it's very, very important that we continue to help support Minnesota veterans here in that work. So I would urge support of the committee on this bill as well.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Any closing remarks, Representative Clary?
Yes, thank you, Chair Newton. Just like last week, I think that this is, you saw a lot of bills last week and you kept saying that this is a fixer, this is something that, you know, was missed last time. So I appreciate the discussion that we've had, and fix might not be the right word, but this is so family oriented. Like one of them said, you know, it's like if you work with one person, it can help heal the whole family. And yes, I am a freshman. I'm 65. And guess what? I'm learning a lot from a lot of people that are younger, but also I've had experience in this. And so, therefore, being a freshman, it's important to bring new ideas to committees. So I think that needs to be looked at. And just like you said, Representative Weens, it is important for us not to forget the survivors, because that's what you had said on another case. So or not the survivors, but the other part of the family. So I think data is really important, and I think that this program is really good, and it's not a one-size-fit-all, but guess what? It fits a lot of people, and it will make a lot of healthy families. So I'm encouraging you to vote yes on this.
Good. Thank you, Representative Clardy. So I renew my motion to move House File 1353 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I just want to follow up on what Representative Clardy is saying, is that all of the bills today actually have to do with families. And I think we as veterans recognize the importance of families and the roles that they play in supporting those of us that serve, that they do serve themselves. We are probably going to wrap up our sessions on, about the 7th of March, something like that. So if any of you have any bills or anything that you would like to have brought forward just for, for us to look at, please don't hesitate to contact me or Adam, and be happy to hear whatever you might have, or any of the colleagues that have veterans issues. Representative Lissigard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we leave, I'd just like to give a shout out to the 148th. I don't know if anyone saw that, but that was a pretty big deal, right?
Yeah.
Anybody wants to sign on my bill for that hangar, it's $25 million. I would greatly appreciate it, but it does go show that, it's important. Homeland Security, it's right here. So shout out to them.
Yeah, good. Yeah, thank you. That's good. They were in the balloon, I think. So with that, the committee is adjourned. Thank you all.